type of an environment should one live in? What type of surroundings, Master?
Congenial surroundings should be there, which should be helping in your way to spirituality. And that are people who are of good character, God-fearing, lovers of God, and loving of all humanity.
Congenial surroundings, living with people of good character, who are God-fearing, and who are trying to help all humanity. Now, if you people just sit here and look at Master, I'm going to come out and join you.
That's a torture. You can sit down. When that starts.
Yes, sir. I think you have a wonderful idea. And the suggestion was that we have a few minutes meditation in your presence and with your grace while the sound is being brought back.
Welcome there. Sit in sweet memories of God. Forget everything else, even your own bodies. God is all alone. He wants everybody to come to Him all alone. Sit for a few minutes and then your sound is all right. So saints also say, this man body is the highest in all creation. It is next to God. Quran says, when man body was set up, angels were asked to bow down before the man body. All scriptures speak very highly about man. It is a golden opportunity in which we can go back to our homes, true home, the home of our Father. So the Adessa tell us, as Christ said, it is day He works. When night falls, nobody can work. The masters also enjoin us, well, it is your daytime. You've got the man body. This is your day time in which you can work to go back to God. When days pass away, nobody can work. They say, look here, God is all light. So you are also children of light. They say God is all wisdom, and you are doves of the ocean of all wisdom, you are also have wisdom. So God is eternal, God is spirit, and we are spirit in man. If spirit does not die, is eternal, how can you fear to die? So they tell us, look here, this is the man body you have got, in which you can go back to your home. Ever since we were separated from God, so far we have not gone home. Otherwise, we would have been sitting in some another condition, state of mind. Those, so they enjoin. It is high time, a man body, this is the day for you have arisen. In this man body only to work, you can work to go back to God. But pity it is, they tell us to awake. This all scriptures tell us to Veda say, awake, arise, and stop not until the goal is reached. What is the goal before us? What is that goal which cannot be achieved in any other form of body? That is to know God. And to know God, one must know himself first. Because God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, by the mind or intellect. With intellect we can only understand to some extent what could be our goal and not further. So all masters who came in the past, in the east or the west, they all gave out, man know thyself. Of course, in their own languages, which were prevalent at that time. Greek philosophers said the same thing, Gnosis Theoton, in Greek language, of course. Old Latins said the same thing in their Latin language, Gnosis Ipsum. All Persian philosophers said the same thing, the ultimate goal of all knowledge is to know God. They say man has three aspects. Physical, he has got physical body, he has got intellect, but he is conscious entity. So if we have dwelt physically and intellectually, of course we have dwelt wonderfully. But if we are not dwelt spiritually, we are ignorant. We are not making the best use of the time we have got in the daytime of the man body that we have got. We should dwell spiritually too. So the masters come to make up that deficiency of spiritual development. We have given food to our body. We have become physically strong. Intellectually also we have advanced wonderfully. Those all things are with you. We have visited moon and all other planets are being visited. We can go around the world in hours. We can hear from hundreds of miles who is speaking, what he is speaking, to radios and televisions. But with all these advancements, we are not happy. The reason why our intellect has given us inventions to make bombs. Hydrogen bombs, nitrogen bombs. The world is afraid. If this war begins, the world will come to an end. And the reason why? Because we have not dwelt spiritually. What to speak of spiritually, we have not even known little or nothing practically about that thing. Who we are, what we are, how can we know ourselves, how can we have the bread of life and water of life by coming in contact with the God into expression power. For that reason, had we dwelt that way, all the new invention would have gone to help humanity. Now it is going to destroy humanity. The master say it is the daytime. Daytime of the man body you have got in which you have to work. If you don't work, then results again night will come up. So that we won't be able to work, we will go where we are attached. If our souls are attached to God, come in contact with God into expression power, then we will go where we are attached. So man body is the highest in all creation. in which we have gone. This is the daytime of our life, in which we can come contact, become contact in God, with God, and ultimately we'll go to His feet where from we were separated someday. Now they tell us, well, look here, friend, brothers, God is all wisdom. You are also drop of the ocean of all wisdom. You should have done something while it was day to come in contact with God. You must have found God by this time. But you have not made even the preparation to meet God. Who will tell us we are wise? Now you'll find that reflection of all wisdom is within each one of us. Even a child, when he talks, he considers that he knows best of all. You see, that's a reflection there. So this is the high time for rising of our body consciousness, to know ourselves. The reason the reply comes, people say, well, what do we get if we just awake and during the day, as it is day of the man body, you work hard, what do you get? You'll get a very wonderful thing, which is God Himself. He is the maker of all creation. Worldness came into expression called world, and world is the cause of all creation, that controls all creation, permeates all creation. She also resides in you. This man body is a wonderful house you live in. It has got so many holes, apertures of the eyes, of the ears, of the nostrils, mouth to underneath. With all these doors open, we cannot run away out of it. Body works as long as we are in the body, but we remain in the body as long as we are controlled by some power in the body. That controlling power is God, into expression power, which is called word, naam, shabdit, kalma. So whenever masters come, they always address to the people at large. They don't look to the labels we are carrying. They look to us that we are man, the highest in all creation. And man is composed of physical body, intellect, and himself is a conscious entity. So to know oneself is the first step towards that. But how can you know yourself? It's a matter of practical self-analysis. Rising above body consciousness, knowing oneself and knowing God. Now we know ourselves only at the level of feelings or drawing inferences. They are both subject to error. Seeing is above all. Seeing is believing. Seeing is becoming. So this practical self-analysis of rising above body consciousness is had at the feet of a master who is adept in that way, through whom grace of God is working. He will give you this demonstration by giving you a sitting, by withdrawing your attention from all outside. Attention is the outward expression of our soul. God is all attention. Our attention is identified with the man body, outgoing faculties, and the world around us. We are identified with it so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. So it is a matter of pure self-analysis. The masters, I say this in my spectacle, I can put it out. This is my coat, I can put it out. This is my handkerchief, I can put it out. This is my watch, I put it down. We say it is my body. We say it is my outgoing faculty. Can you put it out? No, it is a practical self-analysis of rising above, withdrawing our attention from all outside and from the body below. Know oneself and you'll see that power is controlling us in the body. So fortunately, whom we want to meet, that also resides in this man body. That's the controlling power keeping us in the body. And we who want to go to him, we are also in the man body. So man body is the true temple of God. But the Master tells us, when you know all this, why don't you, it is daytime, arise, awake. And it is for them the day to work. It is for us also the day to work. Their day is so long in the body, they come to take back souls back to God. They work while they are in body. Our also daytime has arisen of the man body we have got. When it is time to rise up a body consciousness, know ourselves and know God, who also resides in the man body. When you go to a master, then he always advises to tap inside, as Emerson says. Those who go to the master, they always advise you to read this true scripture of God. It is the biggest Veda, biggest Quran, biggest Bible, biggest sixth scripture. You know what six scriptures are, other scriptures, what is given there? Those masters who rose above body consciousness, traverse into the beyond, whatever they experienced, those experiences are contained in the scriptures with us today. We are fortunate in the 20th century that we have got the scriptures of all masters who came in the past so far. Had we come before them, those masters' golden words, which are worth the emeralds and gold, they would not have been with us. So masters say, masters, what they say, they have seen and then given out. They gave out the same thing to all the world around. To whom? To man. They say, man, know thyself. You are who you are. You are conscious entity. You are having the man body. This is the daytime in which you can know yourself and know God. So whenever they come, they give the same basic teachings to all masters. They help them to know themselves by giving a demonstration how to rise above body consciousness. Also, open the inner eye or the single eye to see him. In what way he can be seen? Can you see the absolute God, the worldless state of God? Nobody has seen, nobody can see. But when God wanted, I one and wish to be many, there was vibration. Vibration results in two things, light and sound. So God is light, God is music of the spheres. Nada, the voice of God, Kalam Kareem. So man, it is said in Quran, when you are sent unto the world, he put seals on the eyes and seals on the ears. So when they come in the take, they manifest themselves in the man body, world made flesh, they come to unseal, break the seals on the eyes, they begin to see. They break the seals on the ears, and they begin to hear. They didn't know. You see, the Christ said, what you see, the old prophets could not see. Whatever you hear, the old prophets could not hear. I have come to make those people see who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. What is meant by that? We see outside when our attention is identified with the world outside. When it is withdrawn from outside, you cannot see outside. This is what you meant, who see, they may be blind. Their attention should be withdrawn from all outside and put an whole attention, tap inside within the body, which is the true temple of God, and they will see, begin to see light. So the masters come to bring back children to God. So it is a great blessing to meet somebody who is in body, in whom the grace of God is working. And if we sit by him, we will meet with the same fate that they have got. Every saint has his past and every sinner future. Any father would like his son to be just up to his tender. Any king would not like his sons to be ministers, but he would like to become kings. So any saint who comes to the world, he wants everybody to become saints. So fortunate we are, we have got a man body. It is the daytime which we have to awake, shake off all lethargic sleep, know ourselves and to know God. To know ourselves is not possible. Those who have got some backgrounds, that's another thing. They might have got something to see and something to hear, but they even don't know what to do further. They still want further guidance to come to the feet of someone who is on the earth plane working through the grace of God. So we cannot do ourselves, we cannot know ourselves. Why? Because our attention, which is the outward expression of the soul, is identified with the outgoing faculties, body and the world around us, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We cannot discriminate ourselves from the body. We are working at the level of the body, and body is changing every moment of life, being made of matter. All world around us is also made of matter, changing at the same speed as the body is changing. As two things are changing at the same speed, and we are identified with it, we see it is stationary. It is an optical illusion. How to come out of that? So masters give us a demonstration how to come out of that, how to rise above body consciousness, how to be reborn. So this has been the teaching of all masters, basic teachings. Those who came in contact with that, they had it. So where the world philosophies end, there the religion starts. Whatever methods, practices we follow, they all relate to the outgoing faculties. Intellect, our body, lives on the body. Those who are already identified with it and do such like practices and methods which relate to these things, how can they rise above body consciousness? So need comes someone, if the real urge is there within us, yearning, God is within us, he watches my child is after me. So he makes some arrangement to bring him in contact with somebody in which he is working, in grace is working. He is a man with eyes. We are man with no eyes. In the terminology of the saints, we are all blind. So what blind in the terminology of the saints means not that those who have got no eyes on the forehead, but whose inner eye, third eye, single eye is not open. So they come to make people see who do not see, and those who see, they may be blind. So this is golden opportunity we have got in man body. Those who have got yearning within us, when fire burns, oxygen comes to help. There's food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. That water of life and bread of life is already within us in this very man body. The master don't do anything, don't put anything from outside, they simply withdraw our attention from outside, take up to the seat of the soul in the body where that bread and water life is there already. And that is the light of God in the music of the spheres. And that takes you where you come in contact with that, that will take you straight back to the place from where it emanated, that is to absolute God. This is the natural yoga or the sociable yoga which is given by the masters, which even the children can enjoy. Young, old, all can enjoy. So you are fortunate. You have got that urge within you. That is why you all are gathered together here. I am really glad to be amongst you. I came twice last time. First in 1955, then in 1963, now in 1972, after long 9 years. I feel joy to be amongst you, those who are hungry after God. So, who creates this hunger, he also supplies the bread of life too. It is he who sends and it is he who gives. So I am very much pleased, very much feel joy. I am one of you sitting, we are all children of God. We should go back to God. Don't do such right things which may bring us back again to the world. Our master used to say, one man, there's some prisoners in the prison house. One man's term of prison was to expire. He was telling his brother, prisoner, look here, brother, keep this thing with you, I'm again coming back. So if you are tied to the world, naturally you will come back. If you are tied to God, it's daytime to be tied to God, then you will go to the feet of the God. This in few words I wish you digest what we are after, how can we have it, and where can we have it. So thank you for getting together. I am also pleased to come from far east, but that inspiration from God guided me here.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was recorded on November the 12th, 1972, at the Unitarian Church in Berkeley, California. Our reader this morning is Christine Clevenger. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, David.
Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm going to continue reading from Master's talk called Chastity and Forgiveness, which was published in the January 68 issue of Satsang Desh. And then I will read another talk entitled The Real Reality. Okay, so continuing with Master's Chastity and Forgiveness. Through association with a saint, the power of God becomes manifest within. A saint bestows the essence of esoteric science. Anyone can lecture, sermonize, or give a religious talk, but practical inner experience can be given only by an awakened soul. Only an alert and wide-awake person can practice chastity. The thieves of sensual desires cannot rob such a person. It is only an alert and conscious person who can cultivate chastity and attain higher consciousness. By practicing chastity, one gradually rises into cosmic consciousness. When consciousness dawns within, one is not troubled by the sensual thieves. We are being robbed by five deadly passions. In the absence of chastity and forgiveness, a thick wall of darkness comes over the soul, and we are not our own. Christ has described this state as death of the soul. What is death of the soul? It is the bedimming of the light consciousness in us. Attachment to material comforts lowers our consciousness. Consciousness increases with increasing awareness. And from where does this awareness come? It comes by cultivating compassion and chastity. See how important these virtues are. But we do not pay attention to them. We have already been blessed with His grace and also with the capital of Holy Nam. Is it not our duty, then, to safeguard our capital? We should keep His commandments instead of doing mere lip service to Him. One who is courteous to one's guests is a great soul. One who offers them a seat is a saint. One who lacks these courtesies is either a heretic or a pagan. Now all this is about our external conduct. One who is endowed with the two virtues of chastity and compassion would welcome even an enemy courteously. A Mahatma, our great soul, has this great virtue. He welcomes anyone who calls on him, even in the dead of night. Such a person remains cheerful even in the face of death. To observe celibacy in youth is a great thing. People usually postpone it for the old age. Those who do not meditate while young would not be able to do so in old age. As in old age, physical disabilities appear one by one, and we cannot engage in meditation. One should therefore make a start while young. Saints have said that one who practices celibacy while young is a prophet. This is not a child's play. We simply read these things and then forget about them. We do not forgive others. And in the absence of forgiveness, anger, jealousy, hatred, backbiting, etc. emerge. Our hearts and minds are contaminated with all such thoughts. We talk of these things and do not hesitate to slander those with whom we are angry. My master used to say, all sensual appetites have some taste in them, but what taste comes from slandering others? If there is any, is it sweet, sour, salty, or insipid? Still, every family, society, and country is afflicted with this malady. A devotee who is an embodiment of forgiveness has nothing to fear. He will always greet others with love. If someone thinks ill of you, let him do that. In what way does it affect you? Instead, the former harms himself by being angry and jealous. And if you retaliate, you will be afflicted likewise. One who considers that the Lord is omnipresent and is dedicated to Him is not carried away by what others may speak of Him. These are the shortcomings in our way to self-realization and God realization. Forgiveness extinguishes the fire of anger. Great souls go to the extent of welcoming those who find fault with them. Once a man went to Lord Buddha and started abusing him. And when he was about to leave, Lord Buddha remarked, "Brother, listen to me. If the receiver refuses to accept the gift offered to him, it would remain with the giver. I refuse to accept the gift you have brought for me." Kabir said, if one abuses and the other retaliates, there would be a shower of abuses. But in case of non-retaliation, the matter would end. Where there is compassion, there is religion. Where there is greed, there is sin. Where there is anger, there is negation. Where there is forgiveness, there is the Lord Himself. Compassion leads to forgiveness, and greed leads to sin. Greed and attachment mean desire for name or fame. For the fulfillment of one's desires, one becomes jealous of others. One neither becomes good nor bad by others' opinion. Those who indulge in slandering others are unpaid apprentices of the CID of God. God and the Master are both within you. One who is true to the Master has nothing to fear, for his heart is pure, and purity of heart gives added strength. One cannot realize God unless the mind is equipoised. Anger, jealousy, malice, and ill will, even in thought, fan the flames of invisible fire all around. Kabir says that at a place like this, you will find nothing but negative power. But where there is forgiveness, there is God Himself. Forgiveness washes clear all inner defilement and leads to peace of mind. Otherwise, anger would provoke anger and accusations counter accusations, vitiating the entire atmosphere. All quarrels and strife emanate from abuse. Kabir says that bad language is the root cause of all quarrels. You know how the great Mahabharata war started, just by sarcastic words. One single sarcastic remark of Draupadi led to the destruction of Indian culture and civilization. No power on earth can harm one who is protected by the Guru. If someone harbors in him thoughts of jealousy and hatred, they react doubly on him. This is the natural law. One noble thought gives rise to thousands of noble sentiments, and one evil thought to thousands of miseries. If you sow a single seed in the soil, the plant that sprouts would bear hundreds of similar seeds. Likewise, if you plant a mango seed, you would get hundreds of mangoes from it. One thought may produce a soothing effect, while the other may excite you. Every action, even a thought, has its reaction. The words of a vicious person are like so many arrows, but saints alone can tolerate them. If lightning falls into the sea, what damage would it do? Kabir says that malicious words are like poisoned darts, but a forgiver is like an ocean that is not affected even by lightning. So forgiveness is a great blessing. Kabir says that a man becomes tough by bearing external hardships. He who has prepared his ground can listen to the music of the spheres all the time. The earth can tolerate digging and the forest cutting. Only a saint can bear harsh and malicious words, and none else. You may dig the land or cut a forest to any extent without any reaction. Similarly, only a saint is endowed with forgiveness and chastity. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. You can reap only what you sow. Actions, good or bad, bear their own fruits. We must understand these principles and implement them in life. First, a perfect master capable of imparting the experience of inner light is hard to find. Even if you find one, you cannot reach the goal without purity of life and forgiveness. If you follow and act on what I have just said, you will be liberated from the bondage of matter and mind. These virtues will bring to you higher consciousness, and you will develop faith in the existence of God. After all, what is the purpose of worship? It is to develop firm faith in the existence of God. By self-introspection, you can see what your condition is. Learned people, moralists, and theologians generally preach to others. But what is their own plight? It is well said, wanted reformers, not of others, but of themselves. We preach to others what we do not practice ourselves. The result is that all exhortations produce little effect on others. Be true to He who is dwelling within you. If you practice the two virtues, chastity and forgiveness, you will find that without much effort you will attain higher consciousness, complete awakening, and perfect peace of mind. Thus, you will begin to radiate peace, harmony, and tranquility to those around you. The next reading is Master's Talk, The Real Reality, which was given in Hindi at Sawan Ashram, Delhi, and is from the 1969 issue of Sat Sandesh. The Real Reality. The awakened souls see the world in its true colors. They see from the level of the spirit imminent in the world. But what do? We see it topsy-turvy. And why? We are not yet awakened to the reality. The reality in us is yet confined and cribbed in the body. We have not been able to separate the soul in us from the body. Hence, we look at the world from the physical level only. This is the great hiatus between the two ways of looking at the world. We have taken the physical mold as something real, and as such, the physical world around, too, seems to be real. The scriptures, however, tell us that the world is unreal. By reality, they mean what is eternal, unchangeable and permanent or sought. The worldly wise say, if there is any paradise on the face of the earth, it is here. Oh, it is here and nowhere else. They generally tell us, sweet are the pleasures of this world. Who knows what lies in the beyond? Babar, the first Mughal emperor of India, would open his drinking bouts with his favorite expression, O Babar, drink life to the lees. Who knows when we may not be? This is an Epicurean way of looking at life. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow ye may die. This, then, is one way of looking at life. The other is that of the sages and seers. They do not speak from the level of intellect. They do not give philosophical dissertations. They are, however, very good observers. They speak from the level of common sense. They see the world drifting into changing colors. They look at our pitiable condition and from the anguish of their heart give a clarion call to stop where we are. Man, like a coin, has two sides. He is an embodied soul. The soul is his real self, but the body is not, though he possesses it. The body is the valuable possession of the human soul that dwells in it. It is the temple of God. It has a divine purpose to fulfill. And what is that purpose? It is to solve the riddle of life, the life principle, responsible for the creation of the universe. One can certainly know this life impulse if he were to search for it within himself. How can one do it? One who has himself solved this riddle can help us to do likewise. It is a matter of common observation that human life does not run smoothly. We are the plaything of what we call chance. Every day we pass through various vicissitudes of life. We are ever revolving in the wheel of life. There is not a single soul who is happy with his lot. Kabir tells us, being in the flesh, no one is happy. I have not seen one who may be really happy. As we have identified ourselves with the body, the ever-changing body, we cannot be truly happy. Nanak also says likewise, O Nanak, the whole world is in the throes of sorrows and sufferings. The real happiness then comes from right understanding of the true values of life. Everyone is in affliction of one kind or another. Some are suffering from physical ailments, some from indigence and poverty, penury and want, some from mental obsession, memories of past regrets, and fears for the future. When questioned if anyone was happy, the great teacher replied, yes, one who is devoted wholly and solely to the service of a saint. We must then know what distinguishes a saint from others. One who has resolved the enigma of life is a saint, for he looks on the world from the level of soul. He is gifted with correct perception, and as such, is always happy, and so also those who remain in his company. We know a lot about our physical self. We are sentient beings. We are the living temples of God. We are nothing but micro-gods. We are endowed with the same attributes as of God, though these may be on the smaller scale. We are the children of God, but unfortunately we are beset with mind and the senses. We do not know that the self in us is enlivening the body. And it is in the light of that self that we live, move about, and have our very being. The body, mind, and intellect all depend for their very working on the light of the Atman. This is what we have to realize, and the sooner we do it, the better it would be for us. If we do not do this, we would ever be in difficulties. Unfortunately, we have reversed the order of things. The sense of enjoyments have taken hold of the senses, and the senses, in their turn, have captivated the mind. Again, the mind has the intellect in its control. Behind them all is the self, the rider in the body, which is being swiftly whirled by the powerful steeds of the senses, out of control of the mind and the intellect. We have, therefore, to apply a reverse gear. For this art, we require the help of a Gurmukh, a really worshipful disciple of the Master. Those who realize the need for reversion or recession always pray, O Lord, grant us the company of a Gurmukh, a close contact with a sadh or disciplined soul, and dais in the fast color of Nam. O my beloved, take me to such souls in whose company we may think of nothing else but Thee. This, then, is the only way. For right guidance, we have to approach the God power in us, and this power, in its turn, would direct the intellect in the right direction. Enlightened by the God power, intellect would control the sense-ridden mind. This is how the human machinery is to be set right. We are the living soul in the body. Kabir tells us, O Kabir, the soul is from God. And again, the self belongs to the house of God. The soul then has quite a high birth and a proud lineage. But unluckily, it has fallen in love with the material mind and has thus debased and disfigured itself beyond recognition, all forgetful of its real source. When we come across an awakened person, we surrender our intellect unto him. Under his guidance, the intellect grows stronger from day to day and begins to judge things aright. Then we begin to hear the small little voice in us, the voice of conscience. At every step, it gives us a correct lead. And if we attend to this little voice of conscience, all goes well with us. But when we bypass this imperial wall, its voice gradually grows dimmer and dimmer until we cease to hear it altogether. This means going back to the old way of life, which irresistibly takes us into the fields of sense enjoyments. And once again, we find ourselves in difficulties. A true devotee of a saint sets his house in order. He does not put the cart before the horse. This, then, is the right understanding. All people in the world are dyed in the color of the world. When the awakened souls come, they address not to others, but to themselves, their own body and mind. The body is our first companion when we come into the world. Then, along with it, there are the bodily senses, and they too are to be addressed and admonished. O my body, what hast thou earned since thy advent into the world? We come into the world for self-realization and God-realization. If we do not do this, we are no better than sheep and goats that nourish a blind life in the brain. The body and bodily adjuncts like mind, intellect, and the pranas cannot help us in this respect. It is only the Atman, the sentient being in us, that can apprehend the power of God working in the body and keeping the body and soul together. My master, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh, used to illustrate this point very beautifully by a parable of a monkey and a goat. The housewife would milk her cow and go out to attend to her household chores. And in her absence, the clever monkey, though tied with a long rope, could yet manage to go near the pail, drink the milk, and then smear the goat's mouth, with milk. When the lady saw the empty pail, she would, mistaking the goat for a culprit, give him a beating. The monkey would sit quietly and enjoy the scene. This is what happens with us in everyday life. The intellect is being led by the mind, and the senses into the wrong direction, and the jivatman, as enveloped in the intellect, suffers the consequences of the acts committed by the mind. It is thus the embodied soul that bears the ill effects imputed to it through the courtesy of the cunning mind. The world is a play of the mind, and mind alone is responsible for our deeds. Let us for a moment think over the way we come into the world. Can we say how this body came into being? Every offspring takes after the fashion of his own species. What is there to give shape, substance, and form to the seed in the body? There is some power that does this. We have to know this power and to get into touch with it. This we can do only in the human form. Thus their appeal, the appeal of the enlightened ones, proceeds to their own bodily senses. Oh, my eyes, God has placed the light of life behind you. It is now incumbent upon you not to see anything else but the light of God. Oh, my ears, God has placed the divine harmony, Sat Bani, behind you. It is therefore necessary for you to listen to nothing but the voice of God. The ancients speak of Sat Bani as the music of the spheres. This music is going on eternally. The voice of God has been reverberating in all the ages and speaks of the True One. Though the music of the spheres is going on all the time, we are not conscious of it. How to get a conscious contact is the next question. The scriptures tell us the word of the Master is imminent in the entire creation. It emanates from God, and God himself, in the form of God-man, makes it manifest wheresoever he willeth. And again it is said, whosoever gets in touch with it safely ferries over and gains life eternal. Coming back to the appeal of the enlightened persons to themselves, we have, O my palate, thou hast endlessly been enjoying the pleasures of the tongue, and yet have never felt satiated. The most delectable and the most palatable thing in the world is the ambrosia of Nam, or the Holy Word. The saints tell us that we should take delight in taking this elixir of life instead of running perpetually after sense pleasures. We are overflowing with all kinds of impressions coming from earth life, and as such are leading merely a superficial life on the surface of our being, far removed from the center of our being. Even when in the dreamland, we are haunted by worldly objects. And why is it so? Simply because we never had an opportunity to tap inside, and we have never known what we are and who we are. We love the world because of our love for the body and the bodily needs. We have never realized that the beauty of the body is due to the soul in it. The moment the life currents are withdrawn, the body becomes a heap of dust and loses all its charm. So long as the soul dwells in the body remains in fine trim. The moment the soul leaves the body, worldly possessions become of no consequence. I will end the reading right there and close with a hymn from Kabir. O my heart, let us go to that country where dwells the beloved, the ravisher of my heart. Their love is filling her pitcher from the well. Yet she has no rope wherewith to draw water. There the clouds do not cover the sky, yet the rain falls down in gentle showers. O bodiless one, do not sit on your doorstep. Go forth and bathe yourself in that rain. There it is ever moonlight and never dark. And who speaks of one sun only? That land is illuminate with the rays of a million suns. And that ends today's reading. Thank you very much, Mister.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. Would you tell us again what you were reading?
I finished Master's talk, Chastity and Forgiveness, and I began his talk called The Real Reality.
Okay, thank you. We had 94 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.